Hello, everyone. Welcome to another exciting edition of Geeks Not Nerds, the podcast. I'm Captain Logan.
And I'm Vince.
And I'm Lucas.
Lucas, thanks for being with us.
Hi.
Lucas has forgotten that he's actually not on camera. We shot some videos earlier, and he just looked at the microphone and hoped you'd notice. But alas, it didn't work out so well. So anyway, Lucas is a really good friend of Vince's, and he's a stand-up comic, and he's a huge, giant mega fan of The Muppets.
Correct. That's right.
Cool. I got it right. Awesome. Anyway, so
not the Muppets.
Yes,
no,
not
no,
the Muppets.
No,
the Muppets.
No, no one's a fan of the Muppets.
Yeah, they are a Reno act, and they're a really poor version of the Muppets. But anyway.
So today we're going to be talking about the Muppets, specifically the new film, which Vince and I didn't get a chance to review right when it came out. So we're going to talk about it now. And we might also, if we have time, just kind of talk about the Muppets a little bit in general, is kind of what I'm thinking. So let's go ahead and just jump right into it. I saw the film right when it came out. Actually, I think I saw it opening weekend. So I'm a little bit rusty. You guys are going to have to remind me of some things a little
bit.
I didn't get a chance to go back and watch it again like I was
Absolutely.
Hoping. But what I remember the most about it is that it was awesome!
It really was. I went to the midnight premiere at the AMC Theater, and I actually didn't think there would be a crowd. Matter of fact, when we got there...
Was there?
There was a huge crowd.
Oh,
we
cool.
were actually one of the last
really?
People who actually were able to get a ticket.
I think it performed better than they thought than they thought it would.
Well, and you know, I will say this. A lot of people have their opinions about Disney owning certain franchises. Disney did an amazing job of promoting this.
Well, it allowed them to advertise the way they needed to.
Yes, absolutely. Well, like, I went to the movie again, and so much fun. I mean, you talk about, this is when, you know, this is the stuff, this is all made up of the stuff that got me into this when I was a kid. So when you see the character of Walter singing the Muppet Show for the first time, that's me, and that is every Muppet fan that's ever been out there, because there's just this wholesome, hey, let's put on a show. We're a family. We may be crazy, but we all work really well together. It's an amazing camaraderie of complete weirdos, and I really appreciate that.
You hit, I think, the smartest move they made at the very beginning, which was, we're not just going to make a movie trying to bring the Muppets back into the limelight again, but we're going to make a movie about the Muppet Show, which
yes.
is what the other films were missing. A lot of the time. My wife actually enjoyed this film even quite a bit better than the original Muppet movie, because it was about the Muppet Show.
Yes.
When we finished, Sarah was like, wow, I mean, there was like a whole half an hour toward the end of that film where you feel like you're just watching the Muppet Show.
Absolutely.
And so, I mean, it's fantastic. And not only are they doing the Muppet Show, but they're writing it like it was.
Bingo. Well, and that was the great thing about the whole idea of this came from Jason Segel, who... All of us Muppet fans owe this guy a steak dinner, let me tell you, because he's done him
that's
and
a
Nick
lot
Fuller,
of steak dinners.
That's a lot of steak dinners.
He's going to be eating for a month of Sundays.
And hopefully he's not vegetarian.
Well, I mean, he basically was asked by Disney which franchise would you like to be a part of. He goes, I would like to do some with the Muppets. So he started going around to like Jimmy Fallon and other people saying, hey, I'm going to do a Muppet movie. But he would tell Jimmy Fallon backstage, it's not official. I'm just saying this so Disney will give me the green light.
That's so cool.
It's really weird. I've never heard of anyone doing that. But they gave him the green light. 2 years later, here we are. And Jason Segel was a huge fan. For those of you who have seen Sarah Marshall, remember the big puppet act at the end of the show that he did. And he's always loved the Muppets. As a matter of fact, I remember Jason Segel saying in several interviews, you know, Kermit the Frog is like the Tom Hanks for younger kids. You know, he's a really good host. You know, he can sing, he can dance, he can make you laugh. And he just always seems to be a good leader, you know, when everybody else is around him.
The only difference between him and Tom Hanks is that I'd say that Kermit the Frog has been in more good movies than Tom Hanks has.
Well, that he's made out of felt and green.
Yes.
Hanks isn't made out of felt. I don't believe this.
And in fact, Kermit the Frog has also been on more game shows than Tom Hanks.
That's very true. That's very true. But, you know, you also mentioned how they did the Muppet Show in the third act of the
yes.
movie. Which, back then, you know, during seasons 2 through 5 were written by head writer Jerry Jewell, who is a fantastic writer. And I think Jason Segel and Nick Stoller did a great job of kind of bringing back what made it work.
Yeah.
And I mean, they had a barbershop quartet of Nirvana, Smells Like Teen Spirit.
So cool. And that's just the kind of stuff they did back then.
Absolutely.
But they were, and the only modernization they did was they remembered that there was some culture after 1980.
Yes.
I mean, that's it.
Well, I mean, you know, they did CeeLo Green's Forget You and with the Chickens called Cluck You.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it was okay. This is only my opinion. It was okay, but I think it would have been a much cooler song had they done Forget You with the Electric Mayhem.
Yeah. You know, Electric Mayhem...
Yeah, exactly.
I felt like Electric Mayhem was sorely missing through a lot of it. And I think part of that was because of voices. Because it seemed to me like there were... And I could be wrong about this with them, but I felt like... And this was a catch-22, you know? It's good and it's bad. The good news was... They didn't give too much screen time to the characters that they just didn't have great voices for, that didn't sound like they used to. They gave Ralph very little to say because they don't have a voice for Ralph anymore. He doesn't sound right. He just doesn't quite sound right. And so, you know, unfortunately, he doesn't really get a song, but if he got a song, we wouldn't like it because it wouldn't sound right.
Well, he was in the Smell Like Teen Spirit number with Baker, Link Hotthrob, and Sam the Eagle.
Yeah, but there were enough other voices there that he didn't stand out.
Yeah.
If he had been singing anything by himself, we would all notice. He doesn't sound right.
Well, and I'll tell you this, all of them, except for the guy who plays Gonzo, which surprisingly there wasn't a whole lot of Gonzo in this. All the other characters were replaced by new characters.
You mean new actors?
New Muppeteers. Mm-hmm. David Rudman is now doing characters like Scooter, Janice from the Electric Mayhem, and he's doing a couple others. Let's see, Matt Vogel, who's actually a native of Kansas City, he's doing a lot of the Jerry Nelson characters, and Jerry Nelson does Floyd Pepper from the band, Lou Zealand, the Boomerang Fish guy, Robin the Frog, who is Kermit's nephew. He also does Sweden.
I was kind of okay with Robin not being anywhere.
Well, it was, you know, that's the thing. I'm such a huge Muppet fanatic. I want to see a moment with everybody.
With everybody.
I want to see a Link moment. I want to see a Behemoth moment. Behemoth is the big orange monster. He was prepping Jack Black right before the show started.
The experience I had was that I saw more than I thought I would.
Yes. Everybody thought that, too. You know, and, you know, they focused, because they had a little scene with Pepe there, but it was only like a quick 2-minute scene, because they wanted to bring back the 70s and 80s Muppets.
Yeah.
And Rolf and Scooter and the Electric Man, they wanted to make sure they got a moment.
Yeah, it's a good point. So there were even some Muppets that were created a lot later that we saw, like, really, really brief. I think Rizzo was there for, like, 5 seconds.
Oh, yeah. He didn't even have... Really,
I think he was there.
Yeah, he sang, but he never had, like, a line.
And I mean, they were making a huge deal out of Rizzo in the 90s. Like, he was the new big giant Muppet.
Well...
And he wasn't awful. I mean, like, you know, I liked him in Treasure Island a little bit, but, like... But, you know... It was kind of nice to not see what you and I grew up with as, oh, the new big important Muppets, you know what I mean, not being right. important anymore. It was kind of nice.
Well, and see, you kind of touched on something. After the passing of Jim Henson, characters like Gonzo and Rizzo just kind of rose up to the front, you know, the front. Because Kermit, my opinion is, any Muppet movie should be starring Kermit and Piggy. That's just, you know, say what you will about Piggy, you know, Fozzie, of course, too, and then Gonzo, you know, but I don't agree with the whole fact of Rizzo and Gonzo being the main characters, which they were in the last three films. Muppet,
I don't like Gonzo having to have a sidekick. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
And, you know, I mean, it worked for the time that it took place. I don't know, this is kind of a hard...
He doesn't have the mileage that Kermit and Piggy people yes. kind of thing. Although, again, I don't love Piggy, but I get it, you know.
Well, and there's something to be said about the original performers. I really love and respect the people who have come up and replaced these people really well.
Oh, yeah.
But
Kermit sounded a lot better than he has in a while.
He sounds really great right now.
Because we had, and I don't know if it's like, because I just haven't kept up. I don't know if it's the same person or if he just got better, but like whoever was voicing Kermit in the early 2000s didn't sound right at all.
Well, after Jim Henson had passed, the torch had been passed off to Steve Whitmire, who actually does Rizzo.
Oh, okay.
And he, like anything, it's pretty big flippers to fill.
Yeah.
You know, so it took him a while, but you're right. I think that was a bit
of a flippant statement, but yeah.
Right, right. But, you know, like, I really think he did a... Thank you, Vince.
Oh, Vince, what are you doing? we should let Vince talk a little bit.
Yes, go ahead.
Vince has said three words since we started.
I said three of them.
Okay.
I counted. I think there was exactly three.
You can jump in at any point.
You know, that's the thing is that the Muppets for me wasn't necessarily something huge for me when I was a kid. I mean, I enjoyed it. It never occurred to me that the Muppets were something that was wholly separate from animation or something to that effect. It was, the Muppets was just another, like puppeteering was another form of entertainment that it never occurred to me that it was strange or that it even left. I just assumed it was still here and that I just wasn't watching it. But apparently it's been gone and it's coming back in a slightly big way. So, I mean, I suppose I'll chime in on the whole Kermit Piggy thing. I do think there's some mileage there. I just, even in this movie, even though I like what they did with it, I didn't necessarily feel that Piggy was something that was breaking new ground. I mean, I just get tired of her. And Kermit, you know, I think this movie, while it does have a, you know, a big plot line involving Kermit and Piggy, the big plot line was Walter, and I didn't mind that the Piggy plot line was there because I had Walter and Jason Siegel, whatever his character's name was.
Gary.
Yeah. Walter and Gary's plot lines to latch on to. I cared more about them than I did about the Muppets. It was just a Muppet movie, if that makes any sense.
It's cool when you can pull off something like this after a whole lot of years of us going, oh man, what happened to the Muppets? It's even cooler when you take as big of a risk as they did and it work. Yeah. And I'm talking about Walter. There's a character I didn't expect to care about or to like, or I mean like you're taking a big risk to invent a Muppet and then to even broach the whole, oh, he's brothers with a human thing, and then it worked.
Well,
it totally worked because they drew attention to it, but then they didn't explain how it works or anything like that. And they even have a song about Am I a Man or a Muppet, and they still don't explain what the difference is. It's fantastic.
And you know what's great about that is that they took that straight. This is what Jason Segel had in mind when he did this. He goes, I want to do a movie that not only combines the Muppet Show, but the first three Muppet movies. Now, in The Great Muppet Caper, which is the second film they did, Kermit and Fozzie are twin brothers. As a matter of fact, you see for a split second...
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, and you see for a split second a bear who is green with a collar like Kermit's.
Yeah.
And it's their boss talking about their dad... their boss is about to fire him. He's like, the only two reasons I hired you two jerks is because your old man was a friend of mine. And you see a picture of this Fozzie / Kermit. And you're Fozzie, Dad spoke well of you too, or something like that.
Which they probably did just for a throwaway gag. Or it wasn't even...
Well, that's where he got the idea, you know? Like, he wanted that whole, how the heck does this even work? You know, like, and I appreciate it. Like you said, they handled it really well.
You know, I want to say that the... making Walter, while a risk, yes, wasn't necessarily the biggest risk because what this is... I mean, of course, it would be a risk to make any movie where the person doesn't necessarily care about the main character when you're walking in.
Or where where it's somebody they made up and we've never heard of them before and we didn't go to see that to see that character.
Yeah, Walter was essentially the godchild. Walter is essentially made up from Jason Segel. Like, he wanted that character... to basically be himself, because Jason Segel is a huge Muppet fan, like on my level, essentially. And they wanted to create Disney. He talked to Disney. They wanted to create a character that can essentially be Jason Segel's vessel into how much he loves the Muppets and how much he really wants to see him back in the spotlight.
Well, and it's a gap bridger for people who don't know what the Muppets is, but still going to see this movie. And it's sad. I had a difficult time. In my brain, even imagining there are people who didn't know what the Muppets were watching this movie, but of course they have to exist, and I'm like, I have a hard time getting my mind around that. You know what I mean? But I mean, like, and forgive me, our younger viewers, but I have a tough time when somebody tells me they were born in like 1996. You know what I mean? I'm like, how did you? Like, I just can't even get my mind around it.
People,
you know?
Born in the 90s, they're buying cigarettes now.
I heard,
as it turns out,
can you believe that? Here's some. This is, I swear to you, the day before the movie came out, I saw an article where, and I don't know if it was Jason Segel or Nick Storr, it was an audio podcast, and one of the people who was in charge of the film said, you know, people who are 26 and younger don't really know who the Muppets are. And I was just lucky enough, I was 26 at the time, I just turned 27, that they cut right off, like, basically when I was born. Yeah. And, like, you know, after that, you know, that's when people like Dave Bowles and Steve Whitmire brought Gonzo and Rizzo up front.
See, I have a tough time buying that, though, because, I mean, like, I can't think of anybody I grew up with who didn't know who the Muppets were. I mean,
oh, there yeah. were... But we're talking old school Muppets. Like, for example, if you don't mind, like, there's a few characters I would like to just, for your viewers...
Yeah, but, well, one second for... I want to stay on there for just a minute, because, like the okay, I saw Muppet Show reruns on Nickelodeon when I was a kid.
Okay,
they
there
reunited
you go.
A lot. Yeah. I saw the movies quite a bit. They were on TV all the time, and we had Muppet Babies in the late 80s. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, like good Muppet stuff was around.
Yeah,
Muppet Babies won a lot of awards. It was a good show.
Oh, they did. But I think what they really mean, because at that point they were in syndication, save for the Muppet Babies.
Right, but I'm just saying that statement made it sound like if you were 26 or younger, you didn't even hear about the Muppets. I had a tough time buying it.
Well, I mean, you know, just like because they weren't in the spotlight as much as they were. Like the 80s was huge.
Well, and and especially late 70s. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. But yeah, like there was, I don't know if either of you, there was a scene in the Muppets movie that just came out where Tex Richmond, the evil oil baron, cuts out the power and the lights go out. Well, when the lights come back up, there are two characters who are making out with each other. Those two characters were only in the first season of The Muppet Show. They were named Wayne and Wanda.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Every time they started an act together, either a monster would eat them, the props would fall on them, something terrible would happen, so Kermit fired him after the first season.
I remember that.
And then, of course, there was Uncle Deadly, who was a villain in this movie, had been seen also since the third season.
Yeah,
The Chevy Chase of the Muppet Show.
And that was pretty cool that they even brought him back. I was surprised.
Well, I got a chance to interview Matt Vogel. Like I said, he was a puppeteer who did several of the characters, and he did Uncle Deadly. He did great as Uncle Deadly. And he, you know, told me, you know, when you have to take on these voices, it takes a long time to really, because Jerry Nelson, of all the puppeteers from the 70s and 80s, had the most range of the other puppeteers, you know. Like, he could really deep and then really soft, like Robin the Frog. And so when you take on somebody like that, you really got to concentrate, you know. That's what I'm saying. I liked your point about, you know, like certain characters like Rolf. They're still trying to learn how to do these characters, you know. So,
and you get the really, really distinctive voices have got to be super hard to do.
That's true. And, you know, he's getting close. And I will say this about Bill Barreda, who does Rolf. He does Pepe the Prawn. He does Swedish Chef now, Dr. Teeth.
And Swedish Chef sounds fine.
Swedish Chef sounds amazing. I literally can't.
Yeah, he sounds perfect. I can't tell the difference, yeah.
And one, I will say this about Bill Barreda. I love all the puppeteers, but I will say this about Bill is that he is the most fierce. Like Frank Oz fierce. Like, he's really good at improv, really good at upstaging, he just puts it all in. And I have a lot of appreciation for him, as well as the other, you know, performers as well. But he's an interesting person to watch, if you know who you're looking for, of course. But yeah. So yeah, I will say there was.
We just got schooled on some stuff right here.
Well, I was gonna say there were a couple things from the movie I didn't like. For example, most of the songs, if you notice, were done by humans, like, and not Muppets.
That's true. Although I was just happy that the music was good. I mean,
you
like
the music?
I thought most of it was good. There were at least two or three songs that I thought that were as good as anything they'd ever done in any of the films before.
Oh yeah.
I think the Man or Muppet song's hilarious.
Oh yeah.
And I thought honestly, I think, and I'm probably in the minority, I think the best song in the whole movie is the song Kermit sings when he's walking down the hallway.
Pictures
in
the
beginning. What a good song. And kind of a tearjerker kind of song too. You know, but I was impressed with it.
I know I teared up. You guys teared up.
And that was the moment. Yeah.
You know, I teared
Here
up.
Here in a minute, I'll tell you all the points I teared up. But go right ahead, sir.
You know, that's the thing is that. I wonder if it was as emotionally weighted for the younger audience as it was for some of us older people.
I don't see how it could have been.
Like, because, you know, sitting in that theater, you don't realize how much certain things from your childhood affects you until you're in that moment.
That's it.
And when you see, I don't want to give away any spoilers, never mind. I was going to bring up a part from the end of the movie.
Oh, you can. I think the movie's been out long enough.
That's yeah. fine with me.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, spoiler warning, but yeah.
So, spoiler warning!
Yeah.
But when Kermit exits the building and sees all of those people out there...
Yeah.
I don't know. I teared up. I know my girlfriend sitting next to me, she teared up. And I'm like, what a beautiful moment. And then I thought, do the Muppets really have that much pull to get that many people outside of their theater?
I'd be there.
I mean, I wouldn't. I'd still be at home being like, oh, look, the Muppet Show.
I would donate on the telethon.
Yeah, but can I put this into perspective for you? You're talking about a movie where they travel by map, okay?
That's true.
I mean, really. How much logic do we really need to how many people we can put outside? One thing, though, that I thought was really nice was even though they got all those people outside, they didn't meet their goal, the money goal. I mean, that was really cool that they didn't get there. There was a zero missing. That was such a cool idea.
You know, that's one of the things I think is interesting is when your main characters don't win.
Sorry, go ahead.
I think it's interesting when your main characters don't win. Like the end of Blues Brothers 2000, like, wait, they didn't win?
Yeah.
Like Celtic Pride, they didn't win?
Yeah.
So it's
very mature to do that for a children's movie, I think. I mean, that shows that you're not trying
I'm
to
not sure how much of a children's movie it was. I'm not sure I'd even go as far as to call it a children's movie. I think it's a movie that's fine for children. It was trying to be kind of a catch-all film. But yes. I mean, like,
and they did they did a good job with it.
I mean, we've had the discussion before that we need to have intelligent shows that are intended for children.
We need more intelligence. I'm with you.
Intelligence. This is how I did intelligence right now.
Hey, Edward Fitzgerald. Sorry, go ahead.
But I think, you know, like Batman the Animated Series, it's not necessarily a children's show, but it's a show intended for children.
Yeah.
And
it doesn't talk down to them, it raises the bar a little bit.
Yeah,
I felt like this movie did that.
Yeah, it's a show that says, please join me, rather than, okay, you sit right there and let me bring you your Oreos and milk.
Yeah. There you go.
That's specifically Oreos.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. There were a couple things about the movie. Like I said, the songs... Somebody had talked about this. I'd seen it on a Muppet website. They had posted somebody else talking about how he absolutely hated the Muppets, which I was like, really?
The movie or...
The Muppets. Yeah, the movie that came out. He hated it. But I will say there were a couple of good points that he had. Foremost amongst them was the fact that he didn't like how it was primarily the human actors and dancers doing the songs. Because if you look at almost every movie, there's only, I think, really the only two times they've done that is in Muppets Treasure Island, when Long John Silver sings, and Ebenezer Scrooge in Muppet Christmas Carol has a song. And that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But,
Somehow that didn't bother me. I didn't even think about it.
And I didn't really think about it until later either. But then again, I think about the Cluck Year number. I really wish it would have belonged to the Electric Man.
Yeah. Because
they weren't, like you said, they were kind of missing. But the other thing I would like to say about the movie, and this is just the movie itself.
I just thought of something. I can think of a decent, of a potentially decent rebuttal for that, which I could kind of see the logic of not having the Muppets really do a lot of singing until they're putting the show back on. And that may be what they were thinking. I don't know.
That's true.
You know what I mean? Because the thing about it is, you're talking the big numbers with a whole lot of people. The whole movie is about trying to get everybody back together, and it takes a while before they're all together again. So if you really think about it, if we were going to have very many songs, you've got to put the songs in with the story you're telling,
yes.
Okay? And the story you're telling has almost no Muppets together until halfway through the movie. How would you do that? You know what I mean? You'd have to write a different story. I don't see how you do it. So, I mean, like, yeah, the first half of the movie, you've got a lot of human singing, because guess what? They're the only people that spend any time together.
Well, exactly. Yeah. And it does That's make... I think it escapes that rule because, like you said, it's because of the plot that it escapes that rule.
I think if they get a sequel, you won't see that again.
You're right.
Yeah, I think that's sort of an interesting thing with the... I mean, the movie's really about Walter and a human character, Gary.
Yeah.
So the movie's about those two guys. And if the Muppets exist in a world where they can all start singing, if the Muppets exist in a world where there are felt living creatures, then surely the Muppets exist in a world where the humans can all sing together.
Well, I feel like I should bring this up because the original script for this movie was Jason Segel's character was going to have a basically like a... boardwalk type of act, ventriloquist act, where he was a ventriloquist and Walter was his puppet, who was really real in real life but pretended to be a puppet. But the people at the Muppet said, hey, this is how the Muppet world works. We all believe that, you know, these people naturally exist in our environment. So if you kind of break that fourth wall in terms of them all being puppets, it kind of, you know, it's very thin line to walk.
Well, and yeah, and I can see that as, are we crossing the line or not? Because because the question is, do puppets exist in the world of the Muppets? Do we have actual puppets in the world of the Muppets who are puppets but not Muppets? You know what I mean? And I can't think of a good instance where we've seen Muppets and puppets, so that's a good question.
There's a
so I can see why they thought that maybe that was a cool idea, but I can see why the why Disney wouldn't have wanted that.
Right. Well, it wasn't even Disney; it was the Muppeteers themselves.
Oh, okay.
Been there since the 70s.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, but
it's a good thing they had some say.
Hey, I'm glad they're still there. You know what I mean? Like, I'm glad they've still got some first generation people.
Yes.
Because I'm not sure you would have. Because the good thing is, since they made the movie, they made. This is just my opinion, but since they made the movie, they made. If they continue on, and I'm sure they will, once all those folks are gone, they will have trained another generation that can do it right.
Frank Oz might be slated to do the next film.
Oh wow!
He was actually supposed to do a film until Jason Segel.
That would be a big deal. Yeah.
Yes, and he actually directed Muppet Stick Manhattan, which is my second favorite film. Of the Muppets.
I honestly don't love that one, but but it's been a while since I've seen it, so
yeah. But what I was going to talk to you about, the only other thing I can really think about the movie is the storyline of Animal. And I never really has there been a Muppet movie where Animal is a main character.
Was that good for you or bad for you? I liked it, myself.
Well, here's the thing. Think about it this way. In any basketball team ever, anywhere, they have never once put in the mascot in the starting lineup. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm not sure I agree with you on that though.
Because of the fact that Animal is kind of the representation, you know, commercially. He's kind of like the guy you always show to, like, promote. He's almost always with Kermit, Piggy, Fozzie, and Gonzo, you know. But he's not a main character. He's part of the band.
I don't think it would have felt as weird had we had more Electric Mayhem, though.
It wouldn't have.
I mean, that was part of the problem is that band always worked as a unit.
Yes.
But I disagree with you I disagree with you in the idea that Animal shouldn't be a huge part of the plot, considering the fact that he was that he was a huge major plot point at the end of the first film.
Well, it's not so well. That's a good point. I just think it's...
He's not essential of a character, you're absolutely right, but I mean, like, he has been a big plot point before.
Yes, that's true.
I don't like the analogy of him as a mascot. I don't think that's quite right. When he pops out of that building huge at the end of that movie, that's a huge plot
point. And, you know, even when I said that, I had that in mind, but I was just like, you know...
Maybe no one will bring that up.
No, it's not that. It's that...
Sorry. It's like, God, I didn't think that anybody else here knew the Muppets at all. You know?
Well, no, it's not even that. It's just that it's kind of a thin line of, like, okay, yeah, he did have that part, but, you know, like, Scooter, who has always been Kermit's right-hand man on the Muppet Show.
Scooter's barely been in the movies.
Well, he was really... I thought he had just as big of a part as Fozzie.
Yeah, he did, which I was surprised by. Yeah. And liked.
And he deserved to.
Well, the movie's about the Muppet Show. And Scooter... Well, yeah, I mean...
And when Kermit went to go find Biggie, he goes, Scooter, I need you to take care of hosting duties.
Yeah.
You know? And Scooter was actually in the Muppet Stick of Manhattan, had a bigger role than even Fozzie.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what, you know, that's the thing. Everybody's kind of taking their turn, if you think about it.
That's right.
Animal,
that's
Scooter, Gonzo, you know.
Walter.
Well, in that case, if you got a problem with how big Animal's role was, because honestly, I'm just thinking about how hilarious I thought it was when they brought out his drumsticks in that really expensive looking case, which was awesome. But anyway, I guess my question is, if you thought that was a problem, then who did they not give enough screen time to?
Ralph the dog.
Okay, but like I said, I don't think they could have. I don't think it would have worked.
I think it would have been a good chance for Bill Burita to...
He sounds
really
too
have...
much like Cookie Monster. That's the problem. He sounds like Cookie Monster.
Oh, you think?
Yes,
really?
Yes. That's my problem with
it. It's funny you say it because the guy who plays Scooter in the new Muppet movie is the guy who plays... His name's David Rudman. He plays...
See, maybe they should have him do Ralph and he won't sound like
That's funny you thought. That's interesting. Because I like hearing people like, oh, he sounds like so-and-so, you know?
Sounds too much like Cookie Monster.
During the Smells Like Teen Spirit number, Steve Whitmire voiced both Link Hogthrob and Beaker.
Mm-hmm.
And so Bill Burita did Rolf, and then I believe Eric Jacobson did Sam the Eagle. But that's the thing with
and these, I don't think Sam the Eagle sounds quite right right now either.
And that's the thing. You know, it's all about, you know,
he sounds too much like Ernie.
He sounds what?
He sounds too much like Ernie.
Really?
Yeah.
It's interesting how, you know, like, different sounds. I like that. That's interesting.
Yeah, he, yeah, well, and the thing about it is, Sam Eagle wasn't in much of the movie, but he's been, but they've been having him do a lot of stuff on the internet shorts.
Yes.
And I'm assuming it's the same guy.
Oh, yeah.
And I haven't liked the Sam Eagle shorts as much as some of the others because I just don't think that he sounds quite right.
Yeah.
But I did want to put this, we're going to go a little bit over time. I did want to mention this real quick because I wanted to know what you thought about it. I think the internet shorts are brilliant.
Yes, especially
like I think that's what. But I feel like that's what's brought. That's kind of what brought it back.
Well, I thought there were, some of them were okay, but the one I love the most, and I'm sure both of you guys have seen them, is the Bohemian Rhapsody.
Oh, yeah, it's great. It's fantastic.
Is, oh my, when that thing came out on November 29th of 2009, I tell you what. That was just like the craziest thing ever.
Oh yeah, it was cool,
and it was phenomenal because they had all these different people who haven't spoken forever.
Yeah,
Lou Zealand, the boomerang fish thrower, Crazy Harry with the dynamite. I mean, Beauregard, the janitor. I mean, they did such a great job with it.
And I like how they're framing it, where at the end it's always somebody watching a computer. It's such a cool idea because, again, it's modernizing it without modernizing it. I mean, like they don't have the Muppet Show anymore, but like they're just making internet shorts because that's where people are watching.
Well, exactly.
I love that. But I gotta tell you, the one I love. I mean, that one's my favorite. I'm with you.
Yeah.
But what about the one where the Swedish chef is making pumpkin pies?
That's
hilarious.
Good.
Because have you seen this?
No.
The pies. I'm sorry, the pumpkins are trying to not get made into pies by the Swedish chef. So they keep trying to come up with ludicrous instruments that he can't possibly have on hand to turn them into pies with. So bazooka, he's not going to have one of those.
Yeah.
And then, you know what I mean?
And, like, oh, come on.
Every time he comes, every time they come over, he pulls it out and he's got one. You know, yeah. And like a chainsaw. It's like, yeah. I love that. It's hilarious. And then at the end, they turn into pies and they're Muppet pies.
The best way, and I'm glad this kind of brings it to a good point, is that the Muppets are really good at complete chaos.
Yeah.
And Kermit is in the middle of this whirlwind of all these, you know, dynamite, you know, rubber chickens, you know, cannonball axe, I mean, you know, boomerang fish. All these things are just kind of circulating around him, and he's the one who somehow can bring them all together and put on a really good show. And I think that's what was the most amazing to me, and that Steve Whitmire did so well at in performing Kermit, is making him the leader again. With Fozzie at his right side, his female pig to his left, and Gonzo and Rolf and Scooter and everybody else, you know, with him. It's just, it's great to see that old family. And
you know,
it was really great.
I think it's interesting that the Muppets seem to be able to do fan service at the same time as they can do a good movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, how many times do you go to a movie and like, man, that was fan service. There was nothing in there that was good. It was just, oh, look, we're going to put Venom in a movie now.
It did what all these other revival films haven't been able to do, and part of that was because we didn't have to watch aged actors trying to do what they used to.
That's true.
Because if you think about it, this movie, like all revival movie, because that's what it is. It's not a reboot. It's a revival film. And it has a lot in common with Indiana Jones 4 and movies like that. We're trying to bring it back, but it avoids a lot of the stereotypes, partially because it's freaking Muppets, so the story's not going to be Kermit has a son he didn't know about, you know what I mean? And then that's how they get away from stuff like that.
Well, and Jason Segel also had said something in an interview, and a lot of fans really agree with this, the best type of Muppet movies are the type of movies where it's Kermit and the gang saying, let's put on a show together. That's what makes the Muppet movie, The Great Muppet Caper, and this film work so well.
You know, the reason Sarah says that this movie is better than the Muppet movie is because she says this movie has a plot. She's like, the Muppet movie is just, they're all trying to find each other, and then they try to go get famous. That's the whole movie. And I mean, I still think it works, but, I mean, she's kind of got a point. There's a lot of story in this movie. And there's more than one character who has an arc.
Oh, yeah.
Yay.
Yeah.
Me being story guy, yay. You know, I wasn't expecting that, and there it was.
And I tell you what, they did such a great service to, like you said, the fans. It wasn't just the fans, but they did do the pretty good service. For example, Sweetums, the big monster.
Yeah.
When they find him, where do they find him? At a car dealership.
Of course.
The same car dealership that he was at with Milton Berle in the first Muppet movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, I'm not kidding, when I saw that, I didn't see it coming. I just roared laughing, and I was plotting. It was such a great move, you know. And there were so many little moments like that to recall, you know.
I had a theory I wanted to run by you real quick.
Sure.
Because I want to know if I'm stretching or if you thought of this also. They did some connections and callbacks even to some bad stuff, I thought. And one of them, I think there's a reference to Muppets in Space. And what I'm thinking of is when Gonzo's on top of the roof before he blows up his building, and he says, "People of Earth." I'm the only person I've heard even talk about that. But the reason I think that is because I think they broke the fourth wall way too much with Muppets in Space, which is why I don't like it.
Yes.
Besides the fact that it has a May the Fish Be With You, which is hilarious, but I always like that. But I mean, like, you know, it's hey, Gonzo's from space. He's an alien. Oh no, we didn't ever want to know his backstory. We didn't want to know his origin. But then he goes up on the roof and he says, "People of Earth." He's still an alien.
Well, that's
am I wrong?
Interesting. Well, technically, to the movies, I mean, whether you like a movie or not, there's
it's
a bit of that.
Yeah.
It's not like comic books where you have such a wide variety where you can pull in, you know. But with this, you know, it's just, well, that was the movie right before this one, you
mm-hmm.
know. But that was 12
it
years
happened.
Ago.
Yeah, but it must have happened. We're calling back to everything else. And I mean, you know, it's okay if you want to think that it didn't. I'm glad that they didn't have a giant callback to it. I just wonder if I'm stretching or if they were maybe thinking that.
Because
why else would we say
that?
But why else would we say that, though? People of Earth.
Well, here's
he's an alien. Why else would we say that?
Well, here's something else to consider. Whenever he came out on stage...
No, and that's the answer. Why not? You're right. Absolutely.
Yeah. And, you know, that's the thing. Jason Segel wanted to avoid what kind of brought the last three films. Because Muppets from Space was kind of the... It kind of broke the troupe up. And I'm not just talking like the actual Muppets. I'm talking about like the people within the Muppet
mm-hmm.
Company. Jim Henson even said, you know, there are certain characters, it's like Looney Tunes or Mickey Mouse or anything like that. You're not supposed to give away their backstory. Animal, you're not supposed to know if he came from some
you know
jungle.
Yeah.
Beaker, you're not supposed to know why he only speaks in meeps. You know, and Gonzo, he looks like a combination of a turkey and some sort of insect. But really, I think that's as far as you should go.
And this has happened a lot in pop culture when people have gotten angry because we gave away somebody's backstory.
Yeah.
There were a lot of people who thought that Wolverine should never have had a backstory.
I'm with that.
But it's a good one.
It is good. But I mean, like, you know, when Origin came out, there were a lot of people who said, whatever happened to that whole thing where we said we were never going to have an origin for Wolverine before Weapon X? You know, Weapon X is his origin. Who knows where he came from before that? You can think he's 500 years old or 1,000 years old, and it's fun to not know. And once we know, it takes something away from it.
That's the thing, is that there's been three or four Wolverine origins anyway.
True.
So.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, better example is the Joker. We didn't want to know the Joker's backstory.
Yes. That's a very good story.
And there are places where there are continuities where we get his backstory and it works and it's okay.
Yeah.
But I mean, like in mainline continuity, I don't really want to know where he came from.
You don't want to know that in a Chris Nolan film.
No. Well, and that's a different animal too. But you're right. Yeah, absolutely. Well, anyway.
That animal didn't even have drumsticks.
No, that's true. That's true. No, but I would have liked to have seen the Heath Ledger Joker in a band. That would have been really fun. I wonder what kind of music he would play.
You want to know how I got these sticks?
Well, the sticks, there you go. I will say
scars
this.
From these sticks.
I certainly didn't want to end on nitpicking the movie, because like I said, there were several moments where I cried. I cried when Walter first starts watching The Muppet Show, and you see him getting all these gifts for his birthday, dressing up as Kermit for Halloween.
That was cool.
And, you know, and I loved pictures in my head. Especially when the picture started coming to life.
That was where it broke me. I felt the same as I did at the end of Toy Story 3 at that scene. I lost it.
And you know, it's funny you say that. I always tell people, they're like, "All right, Luke, your fandom with Muppets aside, is it really, do you think it would be worth me watching or me taking my kids to watch?" I go, "If you really like the Toy Story movies, I think you'll really like this one."
Well, besides
Even
Pixar
though they're
films,
apples and oranges?
Yeah, but besides Pixar films, I can't think of... a lot of other really, really just good, straight, wholesome films that don't have anything in them. You know what I'm saying? Like even a lot of the DreamWorks pictures, there's always something where I just groan and I'm like, I don't like that in a kid's movie, man. I don't like it. Maybe I'm a little too old school, but like, there's certain stuff that gets put into kids' movies where I'm like, A, it's too easy of a joke, and B, it's gross, and I don't want it. I don't want my kids seeing it, you know?
I agree. And you know, if you think about it, the most they ever went in terms of being grotesque in The Muppets was Fozzie's fart shoes.
That's no different than a whoopee cushion.
Whoopee cushions.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Muppet fans made a huge stink out of it. Though.
Really?
Oh, it was a huge stink. Sorry. Yeah. Waka waka.
Why was that such a problem?
Because
that's
they
a very
was,
Fozzie thing
they
to do.
They saw it was so. They thought it was really crass. That's what Jason Segel
said.
That's
not crass. If they'd had him walk around in those shoes the whole movie, or if they had him let out like a really long one or something. I'm just saying, it would have been gross.
No, you're right.
You know, it would have been superhero movie all over again. But you know what I'm saying?
But yeah, like a lot of people made a big sting about that. Really, I wouldn't. I had no problem. Because I was kind of worried at first. But you got to think of all the other like adult jokes that they've had.
Oh, and, sure, absolutely. And the thing, what's great about the Muppets is that it's always over their kids' heads.
It's always over the kids' heads, mm-hmm. but the adults are like, all right, that's pretty cool. Like, for example, and I'm sorry I keep bringing this song up, I just love it that much, is he smells like Team Spirit.
Yeah.
Beaker's line is supposed to be my libido, but he holds up the towel that says me, 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 moop, instead of my libido, because, you know, hey, they got to cover that up.
Yeah,
you know?
That's cool.
They're smart about it. And, you know, that's the thing. It's a good, they found that good balance of both for children and adults and for college students and teenagers, you know.
I'm just going to throw this out here because
I was going to say, I feel bad. I feel like we're completely out of this.
So maybe the organization of the Muppet universe and the idea of organizing a show within the Muppet show is sort of a metaphor for each other, this sort of controlled chaos.
Yes.
Yeah, I just wanted to throw that out there. I thought that was interesting.
Kermit has a moment right before.
I was just
show
hoping
starts.
You'd take that for maybe like 3 whole minutes, so we could say that Vince was in this podcast.
Vince is here. Well, Kermit had. There's this little.
No, dude,
moment.
It's a barbershop quartet, Vince. All by yourself.
Hello.
Yes.
Hello. Anyway.
Hello.
But I love that Jack Black was in it. I love
Jack
that.
Black
he did a great job.
Okay,
at it.
Can I say that really quick about Jack
Black?
Yeah,
go ahead.
Because I was, honestly, when they first did that, I was like, oh, am I going to like that he's going to be in as much of this as I'm sure he will be? And it was great. It worked.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. I thought, I mean, like, you know, you never want to rewrite a movie. I thought of something that later after the fact that would have been a really cool callback. Since Jack Black was really the guest, because they always had, you know, a guest on the Muppet Show, and you were mentioning going back to something that they'd only done the first season. I think it would have capped everything off for those of us that really know Muppets if they had given him a Muppet of himself.
Well, Jason Segel obviously got one of himself.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, he got to keep that Muppet from the Manor Muppets.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, I didn't know that. But, I mean, like, they did that for the first few episodes.
Yes, they did.
I don't think they did it the whole season. I think after a while they just quit doing it.
Actually, after Connie Stevens, I think they stopped.
Wow, okay. I couldn't have told you that. But
they did make 3 of Andy Williams when he was on during the season 4 episode.
Oh, really?
Because they did a barbershop quartet because he had apparently done some of that kind of
But thing. I just think that would have been neat.
Yeah.
But plot-wise, when would anybody have had time
but
to make
Vince,
it?
But, Vince, tell me your favorite line, though. Tell me your favorite line at the end.
Oh, hail the Hobo King.
Yeah, like, I'm glad they went with that as his ending. That was cool.
You see, they turned him into a Muppet because they wrapped him in a bunch of rope, and then they picked up his pegs and made him dance around.
Good point. Good point.
Now he's a living Muppet.
Well, I will say here, and we can, you know.
Yeah, we actually only have 2 minutes before we're going to have to totally shut down.
Sure. I did want to say there's that one moment that I think really just kind of brings it all together, and it makes my hair stand on end, is when Jerry Nelson is doing the announcement, who is a retired performer that came on to do voice work.
That's
he goes,
cool.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, your host, Kermit the Frog.
That was a
you
big
see
deal.
Kermit behind the O, getting ready to open the door. And I was like, oh my God, that is just so beautiful. Mm-hmm. And then they had him come through the O, the song started. You see the female chorus come along, and you're just so excited. Then the male chorus. Then you go to Zach Galifianakis.
I like that it had been so long, they didn't know how to do it anymore.
I know.
That was pretty funny.
Well, it was really funny because they brought back the only other pet peeve. They had four monsters coming through the arches. There's supposed to be five.
Oh, okay, all right.
But somebody told me they just didn't have enough money for it. But anyway.
Well, they didn't know what they were doing, you know? Yeah. One of them forgot to come on. And she's like,
see, it made sense. You're right. Absolutely.
He's somewhere.
With all the chaos, yeah, it made sense.
Well, we are going to have to go ahead and wrap up.
Well, thank you guys both very much for letting me on the show.
Thank you for being on and for giving us such an education on the Muppets. I thought I knew something, but now I know a lot more than I did. I sure appreciate having you on.
I know I saw the movie.
and Vince, thanks for showing up. I'm sorry. I feel like you totally got shafted.
No, I said some things. Yeah.
Well, anyway, thanks everybody, as always, for watching or for listening. I guess you're listening. It's Not Nerds, the podcast, and we'll see you again in 2 weeks. I'm Captain Logan.
I'm Vince,
and I'm Luke. Thank you very much.
See you next time.